Welcome to the Talking People podcast. Stories. Today, I'm going to celebrate the 8th of March, 2020, by reading Emma Donoghue's The Tale of the Voice, included in her collection of stories called Kissing the Witch, Old Tales in New Skins. And this is exactly what it is. It is like old stories which she retells from a feminist viewpoint. At the end of this story, I will comment. Then I will include a worksheet on language so you can use the story apart from practicing pronunciation and learning to read it and learning to tell the story. To work on your language at the advanced level. Okay, I hope it's enjoyable and I hope it's useful for your English and for the development of your feminist intelligence. The Tale of the Voice. In the days when wishing was having, I got what I wished, and then I wished I hadn't. I'll make no excuses. I was a grown woman when it happened to me. I'd already ripped out my first gray hair and refused two neighbor's sons who thought they could have me for the asking. I'd learned every song my mother could teach me. I was standing in the market the day I saw him. I stopped trying to sell my father's bag full of fish. I stared at the stranger for hours, across baskets of salmon and the shifting backs of cattle, but he never glanced my way. He stood at the side of his merchant father, like an angel come down to earth. All the neighbors saw me watching, but what did that matter now? His eyes were black like ink, mine blue as the sea. His hands were pale, gripping person quill. Mine were scored red with fish scales. His boots looked like they never touched the ground. My toes were caulked with mud. He was as strange to me as satin to sackcloth, feathers to lead, a heron to a herring. Up to that day, I must have been happy. Happy enough, at least, never to wonder whether I was or not. My sisters didn't use language as we gossiped over our gutting knives and wiped wisps of brown hair out of our eyes with the backs of our hands. My mother, when she took a heavy basket from my arms, never searched my face. My father's eyes were cloudy as he flexed his fingers by the fire. Smiling was for Sundays. The morning after I saw this man in the marketplace, I woke up sick to my stomach and decided I was in love. If I didn't choose him, who was 10 times better than any I'd set eyes on, I'd never choose. If this wasn't love, then it would never happen. All the signs said it was. I was mulish and quarrelsome. I turned up my nose at cold porridge and let my sisters finish the pickled cod. And the strangest thing, when I lay that evening at the green edge of the crumbling cliff below our cottage, facing into the mist, I couldn't sing a note. My throat seemed stopped up with the thought of him. This man was everything I wasn't, hadn't, couldn't. Grace was in his smooth boots, and sunlight ran along behind him. His collar gleamed like a halo. He made me think of trumpets and horses and the flash of high gates. If I couldn't have him, I'd have nothing, which was all too likely. He was gone back to the city, and no one I knew had ever been to the city. They said bad things happened there. But nothing bad could happen to a man like that. The city would be a garden at his feet. Women would bloom at the sight of him. Even if I went there, what could I say? What could I do? what would draw his lips down to my salty skin. So I went to the witch, as desperate girls do. Everyone knew where she lived, in a cave on the headland. I had never been there before. I had never needed anything they said she could give. The fishermen told all sorts of stories about her, that her cave was lined with the bones of drowned sailors, with skeleton legs for a door, skeleton hands for bolts, and a full mouth of teeth for a lock. They said that she fed sea snails from her own mouth and was an octopus below the waist. One of them claimed to have seen her once, taking a bath in a little pool with her tentacles spilling over the rocks. They claimed she could turn men to limp fish with a single glance of her watery eye. Anyone who climbed as high as the mouth of her cave would freeze there on the rock until the witch hobbled down and magicked him into a gull to wheel and scream for eternity. They said so many things about her, they couldn't all be true. Girls in trouble were not put off by stories. Still, my breath labored in my chest as I climbed along the headland. My hands shook a little when I stopped outside the cave. She was there before I realized it. She had been standing in the shadows. She was everything I half expected. A stoop, a stick, a wart on her nose, a whisker on her chin. Her white hair had a trace of red, like old blood on sheep's wool. Her nails curled like roots. Her eyes were oysters in their shells, and her voice had the crackle of old nets. And yet she surprised me. "Is he worth it?" she asked. "Worth what? The climb?" "What climb?" she said dismissively. "I meant the price." "He's worth any price," I said, steadying my breath. "Glad to hear it." I studied her suspiciously. "How did you know about him?" I asked. "There's always a him," she pointed out. "A girl comes here for three reasons. To catch him, to quicken his blood, or to bring on her own." "He's not a fish to be caught," I said angrily. "So that's it," the witch yawned, baring a few black teeth. "Tell me now, what would you do for him?" I stopped to think. "If he was drowning," I said slowly, "I suppose I'd jump in the sea to save him. I'd forget father and mother and sisters for his sake. I'd weave nettles with my bare hands." "Not particularly useful in this case," she sighed. "No point my telling you he's not worth it, I suppose." "You've never seen him." "I don't need to, little girl. I've seen enough men in my time. Whoever he is, he's not worth what you'll pay." But I can see by your face that you're sick for him. If he was ugly as Lucifer, you'd still see the sun shining out of his breeches and the stars in his leavings on his plate. No matter how greedy he may be, you'll think everything belongs to him by right. No matter how stupid he is, you'll think he converses like an angel. Am I right?" "I have to have him," I told her coldly. "Good, good," she said, "a girl who knows what she wants. Tell me now, how big a job will this be? Does the man like you, at least?" I flushed a little. "I think so." She peered closer. "I've got a ring on my finger that tells me if it hears a lie." "I haven't spoken to him yet," I said in a rush. The witch made a short bark I could only think was a laugh that was out of practice. I stared at her fingers, bare of rings. "This must be love, indeed," she said. if you know nothing about him. This must be the real thing, if there's not a pinch of truth in the brew. This is the truth, I shouted. I want to walk where he walks, to walk in his world, down there in the big city, for his eyes to catch on me when I'm dancing. Go dance for him, then. What's stopping you? No, I said, stamping my foot on the turf. You must change me first. Make me better. Make me right. Make me like a woman he could love. She knotted her hands in her frayed shawl. What's wrong with you, girl, that you would make yourself over again? Everything. Change for your own sake, if you must. Not for what you imagine another will ask of you. I'm doing the asking now, I said. A gull screamed. We watched it flap by. After a moment, I asked, Is it possible then? She turned her palms up to the sky. Anything's possible. It felt like a victory. I stood up straighter. I have no money today, I told her, but if you'll give me a little time, she ignored that. It'll cost you your voice, she said. I stared at her. He won't be able to laugh or answer a question, to shout when something spills on you, or cry out with delight at the full moon. You will neither be able to speak your love nor sing it with that famous voice of yours. But you will have him. Also, she said, while I was still taking a breath, there will be pain. Pain? Like a sword cutting you in half. You will bleed for this man. Yes, I said all in a rush before my other selves could stop me. The witch gave me a gentle smile. Well done, my child. Then I have chosen rightly? Not at all, but I have a weakness for brave fools. She looked around her for a thistle, came closer to me, and combed my hair with it. Then she turned to go into the cave. I stood like a stone, bedded in the earth. She looked over her shoulder. Yes? Isn't there something we have to do? What? She said wearily. Should I make you vomit up your voice and bury it under the cliff? Pull it out of your mouth like a silken rope and seal it in a jar? I tried again. All I want to know is, when will it happen? She reached out one filthy finger and touched me lightly on the throat. It already has, she said. Then the shadows around the cave mouth took her in. I walked down the hill, my cold ears ringing. At first I could hardly believe that the change had happened, but soon I had proof. My mother saw me packing my bundle and asked what I was doing, but when I tried to answer her, I found my throat was sealed tight as a drum. At last she understood and shrank back on her stool. One of my sisters turned angry, one mocked me. Another wept as I set off from our cottage, heading into the mountains. I walked and walked. Whenever I would have liked to sing, I counted sheep instead. After a day, I could no longer smell the sea. On the third day, I immersed myself in a mountain lake, and when I stepped out, I was white as the wind. I wound wild roses in my hair. Men who passed me on the road turned their heads to stare. It was all true. The witch had done what she promised. By the time I reached the city, I had no more fear. I sold all I had for a new dress that reached to the ground, whispering as I walked. Power was ringing through my lovely body. What need had I of words? I found him easily, by walking down the street of merchants to the tallest house and sitting on the steps. After a while, he came out with his father. As soon as he saw me, he laughed. He said something to his father and ran down to help me up. My feet were like raw meat, but my smile held his eyes. He was just as I remembered. It was I who had changed. When he offered me his hand, I felt completely new. He was sure he'd seen me somewhere before. I was a puzzle to him. After a few days, he began to call me his little foundling. How the words were sweet to my ear. He didn't seem to mind that. I answered all his questions with kisses. He gave me silk slippers for my feet and a huge velvet cushion to sleep on when he was busy with his work. He took me to feasts and balls and castles and ships. Sophisticated women laughed behind their fans. I took it as a sign of jealousy. Clothed in his gaze, I could not be put to shame. When he was not dancing with me, his eyes rested on me dancing. And one night, in absolute darkness, my flesh opened and swallowed him up. He made a sound like a dog. I burned as if I were being split in two. I was glad I had no voice to scream. I would have woken the city. I couldn't walk for a day or two after. I felt like some strange seaweed washed up on my bloodied velvet cushion. He was so sorry. He brought me trays of sweets. At night, following his whispers in the darkness, I began to learn about pleasure. Every day I woke up a little altered. After a while, I would have liked to ask when we were going to be married. My eyes put the question, but all he did was kiss them shut. That was the first time I felt the loss of my voice. But I was coming to realize that my predicament was not unique. At the balls he took me to, there were many beautiful young women who didn't say a word. They answered every question with a shrug or a smile. If champagne got spilled down their dresses, they only sighed. When the full moon slid out from behind the castle, they watched it in silence. I could not understand it. Had they sold their voices too? Even their bodies were silent, always upright, never loosening their lines. They walked like letters on a page. I had no fear. The evening my new life began to fall apart. I was dancing with all the grace I had, happiness stretched like a scarf around my shoulders. I turned to find his gaze, but for once he was not there. I walked through the ball, my smile unfaltering. Was he hiding from me for a game? Was he busy, perhaps, telling his friends about our wedding? The night was warm, scented with blossoms. On such a night, love should be sung aloud. When I found him on his back in the garden, he was not singing, but whimpering in delight. I couldn't see which girl was on top of him. Her smooth head was turned away. You will laugh to hear how shocked I was. I had so trusted the witch's bargain, I never thought to wonder how long it would last. How I would like to be able to say that I turned and walked away, out of the ball and out of his life, stripping his presence from me step by step. Instead, I must admit that I crouched there, watching for the little eternity it took. Later, I went home with him, as always. He read nothing, it seemed, in my eyes. The night was dark. Without a word from me or even a shake in my voice, how could he tell my heart was cracking apart? The velvet cushion under us was still soft. My legs around his waist must have been as warm as ever. How should I blame him? How was he to know what mattered to me? Perhaps we get not what we deserve, but what we demand. his sweet, dumb little foundling asked so little of him, and that little was so easy for the flesh to give. Why should she get anything more? Some nights he came home, some nights not. On one of the nights he lay beside me, sleeping like a child, it occurred to me to kill him. There was a knife in his belt, hanging on the chair. It could all be over in a moment. If I drank from his throat, might it give me back my voice? Whether it was love or some other weakness that stayed my hand, I will never know. I stole away before morning. After a week without food, I began to follow the only trade open to a worldless girl. The men were not as gentle as he had been, but they could do me no further damage. I reeled from one day to the next, working for a mouthful of food at a time. What a fish out of water I was now, gulping on the cold streets as if every breath would be my last. How could I stay here? Where else could I go? I was betwixt and between, spoiled for every life I could have lived. Always I would be restless now. Always I would know what I was missing. I stayed through the winter, long enough to fill the jar with my tears. Their taste reminded me of the sea. I never thought I'd miss the smell of it, but finally, come spring, I did. I didn't know how to send a message. All I knew was the way home. The days of walking were like knives under my feet. I made straight for the witch's cave and threw stones into its clattering darkness till she came out. "I said you'd catch him," she remarked, leaning on her stick as if we were resuming an interrupted conversation. "I never said you'd keep him. There's no spell long enough for that." I threw another stone. It went wide. She didn't flinch. "Your sisters were here, pleading for you," she said. My eyes widened. "They sold me their hair." She let out a snort. "It was their idea. It seemed to make them happy. They've woven it into a shawl to keep me warm this winter." I stared as she pulled the dark covering closer around her shoulders. "They asked me to bring you home," she went on, "and give you back your voice." I tried to speak, but I couldn't. She came a few steps closer. "I don't have your voice, you know," she said softly. "You do." The flints were digging into the inside of my fists. "Your songs are still out there on the clifftop, hanging in the air for you when you want them." She paused, searching my face. "Wish to speak, and you will speak, girl. Wish to die, and you can do it. Wish to live, and here you are." "I don't understand," I croaked at last. My throat hurt. She yawned. "Your silence was the cost of what you sought," she said. "It had nothing to do with me. What would I want with your voice? The music you make has always been in your own power." "Then why did you take my sister's hair in exchange?" She smiled wickedly. "People never value what they get for free. Having paid so dearly, your sisters will treasure you now." I gathered up all the months of pain and spat. It landed at her feet. As I trudged down to the village, my sisters ran out to meet me. Their cropped heads soaked up my tears. My mother had no words of greeting, only arms thrown round me like ropes. I watched my father among the fishermen bringing the boats in. I would never again leave this harbor that smelt like home. At the end of a week, my feet had healed. By the next spring, my sister's hair had grown long again. Yet another year went by, and I married a fisherman with green eyes who liked to hear me sing, but preferred to hear me talk. This is the end of the tale. And now download the worksheet so you can read a little bit about Emma Donoghue and you can work on the language and the story. And well, because today is the 8th of March, I would like to share with you now a comment on the importance of feminist viewpoints and why we should read feminist work, also literary. Donoghue's feminist viewpoint, analysis and sensitivity widens, surprises and empowers readers, allowing us to develop a critical understanding of the world, but also pointing at ways out, ways of being there in a more lucid and culturally non-compliant way, which means unreachable to its prevailing mandate of violence and helplessness. Learners are generally grateful for the meaningful conversations we engage in. So this is included in the worksheet, right? And now a little note about feminist retellings of patriarchal stories. I would like you to think about this. The feminist retelling of traditional patriarchal written stories is a humanizing socio-political statement, not only interesting and or enjoyable literary work, I mean. As literary work, we do learn about ourselves and others. That's what literature is about, right? As a critique to culture, feminist retellings help us think creatively and critically by rescuing something human that is demonized, distorted, or made invisible in our culture. For instance, notice the character of the witch. Isn't it real? Don't you think it's very realistic? I mean, don't you think that witch could be any feminist? We are kind, lovable people, but we are demonized in society, right? Because we are challenging the patriarchy, right? So, I continue reading now. We also restore information about what history, as written by those in power, has tried to erase, to delete, right? The diversity of viewpoints, interpretations, and versions of the same subject matter or motive, for instance, very typically in the oral tradition, where a same story was told in as many different ways as the minds of the different storytellers allowed. And this is the point I think is particularly precious. A diversity that reminds us of true facts about human beings, who are certainly influenced by their society and culture, much more than they think, but who are also individuals who can think and feel beyond what culture dictates, and who can find ways of conveying different meanings using the same words. For instance, thanks to their experience, feelings, thoughts, creativity, and imagination. Okay? Well, this episode is a bit long, but I think it's important to help us develop feminist intelligence and also to discover this wonderful author. Have a beautiful day and a wonderful celebration of feminism today.